The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed in the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm Kim Tibaldo, CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gildas Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at more than 100 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. Well, we all know that cancer does not discriminate. It impacts all of us in every corner of the world. In fact, more than 14 million new cancer cases are diagnosed each year, with more than 8.2 million cancer-related deaths, more than AIDS, tuberculosis, or malaria combined. About 70% of cancer deaths occur in low- and middle-income countries, such as Kenya, Cambodia, and Guatemala, just to name a few. And while the cancer experience can be vastly different from place to place, there's still a significant need to raise awareness of the global fight against cancer, increase education about cancer and prevention, and increase the number of support networks in place worldwide. Our guest today works every day to meet these needs and ensure that we are all one in the battle against cancer, one photo at a time. Our guest today is Carolyn Taylor. Carolyn is the founder and president of Global Focus on Cancer, a nonprofit organization based in New York. The mission of Global Focus on Cancer is to act as an agent of change to help reduce the global burden of cancer through awareness, advocacy, and support programs in countries where access to information about cancer is critically lacking. Carolyn serves as a content expert with the Women's Empowerment Cancer Advocacy Network, a co-chair, organizer, and speaker for multiple cancer symposiums in Southeast Asia, and is a member of ASCO's Gynecologic Cancer Guidelines Committee. In addition to her work with GFC, Carolyn is a professional photographer and cancer survivor who uses her talent and personal passion to share photographs that remind us that we are all one in the battle against cancer, regardless of race, religion, nationality, or economic status. Thank you so much for joining us today, Carolyn.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started. Carolyn, we've got a lot that we want to cover with you on the show today. Carolyn, you do so much to raise awareness, to document the cancer experience and provide global support to people impacted by cancer. But let's start at the beginning of your journey. You're a cancer survivor. Can you tell us about your own experience with cancer? When were you diagnosed? What was that journey like? And tell us how you're doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was diagnosed with ovarian and endometrial cancers in 2006. I was 43 at the time. I knew that I was high risk for developing cancer at some point in my life due to my family history. My mother had been diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 25. She just turned 88 in November.
Wow.
Her mother had died from metastatic breast cancer. And her mother, my great-grandmother, died from some type of female cancer. So I knew genetically there was, even though I ended up testing BRCA negative, they do consider me BRCA identical. I was incredibly diligent because of my family history in terms of screening and actively going to the doctor every year, making sure that I had all my routine tests. That's how I was diagnosed at such an early stage. I was stage 1B for ovarian cancer and stage 1 for uterine. You know, I often say I had cancer for 3 weeks. I'm pretty much one of the luckiest people out there. Statistics for ovarian are, 70 to 80% are diagnosed at late stages. So, and 11 years later, I'm great. I'm perfectly healthy and well.
And so what was your, so the diet, you led to the diagnosis through your general diligence and surveillance around your health. And then what
mine and my OBGYN, she was always really, really diligent about what sort of screening tests she did with me. From the time I turned, I think, 37 or 38, on every visit she did a transvaginal ultrasound.
Wow. That's
great.
Which
isn't necessarily a good screening tool. I'm sorry?
What was your treatment when you were diagnosed?
Surgery only.
Surgery only. And what's the surveillance program now? What did they do to keep an eye on you?
Well, we just are concerned really about my breasts at this point. I had a radical hysterectomy at that time. So now I'm really diligent. I have a clinical breast exam at least 2 to 3 times a year by my OBGYN and a breast surgeon. And as I get further and further out, my screenings are a little less intensive. At first it was breast MRIs followed by 6 months later by mammogram and ultrasound. Now it's just once a year that I have a mammogram and ultrasound.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And supplement that with a clinical breast exam, because that would be the one concern of something that could come back. But the more years that passes, the less likelihood of that happening is what I'm told by my physicians.
Mm. So, Carolyn, tell us, how did your cancer experience inspire you, you know, to do all the things that you do? What lessons did you take away from that experience, and how have you, you know, sort of used that to guide these activities and your work, really?
Yeah, I think because I was diagnosed at such an early stage, and I knew how lucky I was, I really felt compelled to do something to help other people who weren't perhaps as lucky as I had been, but I had no idea what I could do. I've worked as a food and product photographer really for the past 30 years. But for that first year after my diagnosis, I was required to see my gynecologic oncologist, Dr. Peter Dottino, every 2 months just to make sure everything was okay. He and his wife, Dr. Anne-Marie Badeau, volunteer their time and services around the world, and he would tell me about the incredibly difficult conditions that he would see out there with women having the same kind of cancer that I had and just not having any services. And, you know, I would got me really thinking about there must be some way that I could use my photography skills to help. We can delve into that a little bit more later. Yeah. But, you know, going back, you were asking me also about, like, what I try to impart in others, and I draw my own experience and my story and my mother's, emphasizing that being in charge of your health and being very proactive about screenings and treatment can lead to early diagnosis, a very good outcome, and also can be a cost saving. You know, sometimes cancer treatments can be so expensive, especially at later stages and where you are. But and in the countries I work in, that's a big deal as well, without access to service. You know, it can be a cost-effective savings for you to really be diligent about your health care and proactive as well. So I try to share those stories with people and that experience to try to help others as well.
So why don't you tell us and our listeners a little bit about your organization, Global Focus on Cancer, and really how and when you founded that organization, and really a little bit more about the impetus for that.
Yeah, so GFC I founded in 2011, late 2011. As I said before, I really felt compelled to do something to help others, but I wasn't really sure what I could do as a food photographer. I ended up in late 2009 receiving a random email from British Airways, and it was a contest offering 10 free flights anywhere in the world. These were business class flights, which have ruined me for the rest of my life as well.
The contest was
based on a series of 3 essays, and you would talk about what you would use those flights for, and it all sort of came together in my mind, and in these essays I spoke from my heart about how I wanted to use photography to document that the battle against cancer was universal, that regardless of race, religion, nationality, or economic status, we are all one in the battle against cancer. So I was thrilled when I found out that I won these flights, and terrified at the same time, because how do you go about doing this? But between March 2010 and March 2011, I traveled to 14 different countries interviewing and photographing cancer patients, survivors, caregivers, and medical professionals in an attempt to really give a global face to cancer. And through this project, I saw the overall lack of awareness about cancer, little to non-existent support programs in place in so much of the world. And that's why I created Global Focus on Cancer, in an effort to kind of address those missing needs that I saw.
So Carolyn, tell us first, what are some of the countries that you traveled to during that year of really learning and
during
studying?
During that year, yeah. So the first place I went to was actually Switzerland, which might sound a little odd, but I was having a difficult time accessing global cancer centers on my own. I reached out to a World Health Organization, but they only had 3 people working full-time in cancer, which they don't have many more than that today. So they connected me to the Union for International Cancer Control in Geneva, which is the largest cancer-related NGO. It's a membership-based nonprofit organization in Geneva. They were great. They really helped connect me with their member organizations around the world. And that, combined with British Airways flew, is kind of how I determined where those 12 months would take me. So Switzerland was my first trip. Then I went to India, Nepal, and Bahrain. A few months later, I went to, where did I go next? Israel, the West Bank, Jordan, Egypt. I went to South Africa, Kenya, Tanzania, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Hong Kong, and then back to Italy and Switzerland. So that's where that year took me. Yeah, I was able to see an incredible diversity in cancer care in those regions.
Yeah, Carolyn, we've got a minute until our first break here, but are there just a couple common themes that you saw as you traveled from place to place?
Yeah, so common themes, it's very difficult for people in most of the areas that I traveled to and worked in were low-resource countries. So things that are really lacking there, access to physicians, access to treatment and screening services, access to information about cancer, really, really difficult for people to access.
Yeah. So we're going to have lots of time to dive in on this a little bit more. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We are talking today with Carolyn Taylor about her organization, Global Focus on Cancer, and her work in understanding the global impact of cancer. We have got a lot to cover today with Carolyn. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Cancer, it's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you a breakaway from cancer. Created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIA B, or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo. Today's show is sponsored in part by Bristol-Myers Squibb, NovoCure, and Taiho Oncology. We're talking with Carolyn Taylor, founder and president of Global Focus on Cancer and worldwide photographer. So let's talk about that, Carolyn. You're a worldwide photographer. Talk to us about your, you know, career in photography and really what led you to photograph the cancer experience.
Yeah, so I have been a commercial photographer specializing in food and product for the past 30 years. Then it was my own personal experience with cancer that led me to want to transition more into that sphere and trying to use my photography to show how we're all connected through this journey and battle through with cancer. I really wanted to broaden my work to include more around social cause. So I've been incorporating more in the past few years. I use a lot of my photography to help Global Focus on Cancer with our programs and our awareness. And but also I did two programs this year where I was really excited about working. One was highlighting pregnant women in rural, remote, and urban areas in East Africa for a Merck for Mothers program. And I also did a really interesting project on metastatic breast cancer this year. So this project took me to 12 countries interviewing 32 women, all with metastatic disease. The result of that project is a video and a book, and the video premiered this year at the World Cancer Congress last November and led a panel discussion on quality of life surrounding metastatic breast cancer patients. Linda House, actually, of Cancer Support Community, was on the panel with me for that as well. You know, once again, this was a way to show that regardless of race, religion, nationality, or economic status, everyone is in the same battle together. And I think that's what photography can do. It can kind of pull that all together and show the similarities regardless of where we live or how much money we have. Everyone is battling cancer in the same way and has the same feelings and the same hopes and dreams and fears, you know, and I try to use my photography to show that.
So, Carolyn, take us down the path. Take us on a shoot with you right now. You're going to a country where maybe you're going to a poorer area. You're talking to these folks. There may be cultural barriers. There may be language barriers. Yeah. What do you hope to capture? You know, how do you warm folks up? How do you get them to talk? What do you hope to capture when you're on a shoot and sort of bring that back to your audience?
Right. I think it really depends on what we want to show and what the outcome is and who I'm working with on this. So, you know, I've done jobs where it's been, we really want to show how difficult it is in a hospital. So in some of these low resource settings, so in Vietnam, 2 in 3 patients will share a single bed. Mm. And then there'll be more patients on the floor under the bed. Mm. You know, so you want to show those conditions. You want to show the difficulties. But you also want to show the spirit of these patients. And you also don't want to say, show it in such a negative way that you think it's unhelpful. There are some amazing doctors in Vietnam that help and, amazing clinicians that are there. They're making great strides. So it's a fine line between showing positive aspects and also, you know, really showing the realities as well.
So tell us, you talked about some of the places that you've been to for that sort of first year of that project, and it's a great story about the award that you got. And tell us again a couple of the places you've been to for photography. You know, you talked a little bit about Vietnam. Tell us a couple of other stories about some of those experiences, really what you've seen and really feel like you've captured.
Well, I think mostly I've photographed during that first year. So in places like Tanzania, I spent quite a lot of time. There's a very large albino population in eastern Africa, in Tanzania in particular. They suffer really strongly from skin cancer from the sun. They live under the equatorial sun. Sunscreen isn't available for these people. So I really tried to show what that was like for these patients, these albino patients suffering from skin cancer, the difficulties involved for them working in fields. They don't even have hats necessarily, or like maybe a baseball hat. So really trying to show what those kind of conditions are like. And, you know, it's a simple fix, sunscreen or a hat, but that's not available for these people. Other things in, say, South Africa, a lot of people don't really want to talk about cancer either. A lot of countries, people don't want to talk about it. There's a huge stigma and myth associated with. So trying to get people to open up and to talk about it is also an issue, and trying to get them to participate can be a problem. So you really have to, I usually try to use my story to kind of coerce them into participating often as well, because there's such a stigma that cancer carries in so much of the world that people are reticent to sometimes talk about it and to acknowledge or have their photo taken. So that can take some finagling to get people to participate at times.
And so, you know, I know sometimes, you hear with journalists, photographers, you're there to document a situation. You're not there to necessarily change a situation or intervene. But was it the experience of sort of documenting these folks? Is that part of what led to your founding Global Focus on Cancer, because you just felt compelled to do something?
Yeah, I mean, I really did feel compelled to do something. And I was like, I can do more than just take pictures about this. While I was out there that first year and interviewing and photographing people, I was able to start making connections with people right away. So I'd be in one country saying, oh, well, you know, even within a country, sometimes I would meet people that could be connected but weren't connected. And I was coming in as this outsider, and I was able to start making these connections pretty quickly and starting to help people. And I thought, okay, I can definitely do more than just take pictures of this. I'm a good networker. I can start networking, and we'll figure it out from there while I educate myself about what the cancer conditions are and globally and what we can do to help.
Carolyn, you talked a little bit about some of the stigmas in different countries and different cultures. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? I know, for example, it's sometimes in the Muslim world, there's a feeling that perhaps, you know, getting cancer is maybe a punishment for something that you've done bad in your life, and something that we've heard, things like that.
Yeah, that's not just a Muslim thing. It's definitely in many, many countries, it's that way. The Buddhists and Hindus, a lot of people feel that way too. It's also, that you're a bad person. You did something bad to get this. You deserve it. It's also, you don't want to tell people about it. People really will shun people. There's also a stigma around finances with it, because most people have to self-finance their cancer treatment. So families kind of run away from you. I mean, people are often abandoned. Women are often abandoned because there's the stigma that, oh, well, she's got cancer now. She's broken. Or she's going to die, or she's going to take all my money, to have to heal her, try to heal her. And it's very, very difficult to see. Really, really painful to see people going through that kind of treatment and not having support around them, which is so difficult, not having family support necessarily.
Right.
And
because,
that has
a
lot of
a little
stigma
bit about
in it.
Yeah, you talked a little bit about some of the, really significant gaps in care, perhaps lack of care, lack of treatment. So in some ways, maybe the support piece could in some ways be the gold standard of care, right? Maybe the only thing that folks might get in remote or poorer areas. Yeah.
The thing that we do, so with the support groups that we've started in Vietnam specifically, they are more geared to bridging the knowledge gap between patients and clinicians, which is enormous. Patients come in, they know nothing about cancer. They don't have a clue. And the doctors are overwhelmed with the number of patients generally that are in front of them. So the support groups that we've started there kind of try to, they are meet monthly and they are informational, where clinicians are giving information to patients and family members. In these hospital settings in most low and middle-income countries, patients have to bring caregivers with them to feed them, to take care of them, to help them. The hospitals don't have the staff or means to provide that, you know, bring meals for them and everything. So they are educated through this as well. So it's kind of like an support group, but also a bit of awareness that starts to happen. Unfortunately, there's not a great deal of support mechanisms in place. So not a lot of social workers, not a lot of psychologists or psychiatrists available for this. And we're working on some programs now where we're looking to educate cancer survivors as more peer kind of support givers, you know, so they can go in and sort of analyze the distress, the level of distress screening, and see if there's a way that they can lower the distress through having already been through this situation, being able to give them information and advice and help.
Carolyn, we've got a quick minute until our break here, but I know one of the things you say in some of your literature is that you're really trying to capture the global face of cancer. You know, have you done that? Again, just tell us, you know, just remind folks, you know, what are the common themes that you've seen in these many different countries, different cultures, different religions? What are a couple of those themes?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I really see is that people really have a tremendous lack of awareness about what cancer is, who gets it, what do you do? People go end up going really late. You know, 70 to 80% of patients are coming in diagnosed at stage 3 or 4. And out of them, 80% will die within 2 years of being diagnosed. This is incredibly common. And you see these misconceptions and these myths. You see doctors, the capacity being so strained. There might be a country like Malawi, right? I was there earlier this year. There's 2 oncologists in the entire country. No radiation available at all. No support. You know, there's nothing. We can't even do awareness programs there because there's no.
You don't even have the network to reach that. Yeah. Carolyn, we're going to just take our quick break here. We've got a lot more to cover with Carolyn. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around 2 pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive 1 delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliamealsathome.com or call 617-733-5848.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355. or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Cancer, it's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
We're back with Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo. Today's show is sponsored in part by Celgene Corporation, EMD Serono, and the Takeda Oncology Company. On this episode, we are discussing the global impact of cancer from someone with firsthand experience. Guest Carolyn Taylor, founder and president of the nonprofit organization Global Focus on Cancer. Carolyn, in our last segment, we had a chance to really talk about the amazing work that you do through your photography. But I really want our listeners to get a better sense of your organization, Global Focus on Cancer. And for those who are just joining us, again, maybe just talk a little bit about your motivation to found Global Focus on Cancer and tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing there.
Yeah, so I founded Global Focus on Cancer in 2011, and it means to address the lack of awareness and support that I saw for cancer patients, mostly in low and middle income countries, low resource situations. So our work to date, we've been working, we're an 100% volunteer organization still at this time. We have a wonderful advisory board of really wonderful physicians and clinicians and advocates that are from around the world that have been doing this work and really support us and give us have given us a lot of guidance and information and help with the work that we do. So right now we've been doing all our pilot programs have been in Vietnam, where we started. There was only one cancer support group in the country when we started working there. Since then we've created seven more. Again, like I said, these are really groups that are trying to bridge the knowledge gap between patient and clinician, empowering patients and their families with more information. And also, I'm going back there in April to start two more new groups. We're also working on a set of resource stratified guidelines for cancer support groups based on different countries, different areas. So where there aren't always trained psychologists or social workers available in low resource settings, we're looking for alternatives such as peer-to-peer training programs. And we'll be delivering that first training this July in Hanoi and Hue with a group of breast cancer survivors. And actually Mitch Golant from Cancer Support Community is helping us with this program as well. Let's see, we really try to help them navigate this, hoping that the peer-to-peer support will help patients to navigate better through their treatment, also help family members. We've also collaborated with our partners in Vietnam and the Women's Empowerment Cancer Advocacy Network out of University of Washington, the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center, where we held the first-ever cancer support group summit in Vietnam for Southeast Asia. This was the first of its kind event for the region, and it included experience sharing, coalition, and capacity building. We had over 170 participants representing nine countries in the region for this two-day event. We followed it up this June with a three-day Southeast Asia Breast Cancer Symposium in Hue, Vietnam, where we had more than 200 clinicians, advocates, and policymakers from 11 countries that came together. We're co-hosting this event in 2017 in Myanmar. We're also at these events doing trainings for breast cancer advocates as well. So that, and we also have a basic cancer awareness program that we've developed for factory workers that we're hoping to launch later this year. So that's kind of like the basis of what we do.
And how are you funded, Carolyn?
we run everything on a shoestring, basically. Quite a bit of pharmaceutical funding and then individual donations. But because we're all volunteer, we work in the studio. My photo studio is the home base for GFC also. So we're able to run all of our programs on under $50,000 a year, if you can believe
it. Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. And Carolyn, what are you doing to ensure that these programs are lasting and are enduring and are sustainable in these countries? I think it's critical. I know sometimes, you know, we can sort of swoop in and do a great program and claim success, and then maybe the resources aren't there on the ground to continue or sustain the kind of programming we're talking about.
Right. So we work very closely with the country-specific resources that are available. We'll only assist in creating programs that are sustainable within the country and where the country is willing to take it on. You know, my mantra with this whole thing is, are my good intentions the best intentions? So I feel that that's really critical, especially working in other countries and cultures, to make sure that the work you're doing is in line with the country's needs and what they can replicate and maintain. You know, what works in the U.S. might not work well in another cultural environment. So it's essential to really critically evaluate the programs, make sure they work within the cultural context, and making ownership of the program, putting that onus right onto the country themselves, so that way that you can make lasting programs. And that's, we only work with partners that are capable of doing that.
And do you incorporate your photography into the work at Global Focus on Cancer?
Yes, of course. I always have a camera with me, and I'm always doing that. It's you know, people want to see images. That's actually a really difficult thing for a lot of NGOs, I think, and nonprofit organizations, is to have quality photography and assets. It's very difficult for that to come by. So we're lucky that I'm able to do that as an insider. And I donate my services quite often to help other nonprofit organizations with that, my photography services.
That's fantastic. So when you set up the organization, what was sort of the big vision in your mind of doing this? You talk about capturing the global face of cancer, but what does that really mean?
Yeah, I don't know what it means. you know,
it sounds great, though. I love it.
It was this great idea. You know, okay, I'm going to show the global face of cancer, but the global face of cancer it's everyone's face. It's the same thing. Cancer is so difficult no matter where you are. You know, you could be in, for me, I mean, it was in, I had the best case scenario, and I was like, this is unbelievably difficult, you know, and I really had it super easy. But you see, it's trying to show what this is. You can't. I mean, I wish I couldn't have seen as much as I have seen. You know what I mean? Like, I could take back some of the things I've seen, because they're really painful and difficult to have seen those things. So I think it's kind of impossible to give a global face to cancer. I think it's so resource dependent on where people are, on what it is. You know, it's a nice thought that I could do that, but a lot of what I try to do with it to really make it more cohesive is just do beautiful portraits of people and show how they're similar and the same, and how more people can kind of relate to each other, instead of showing the real difficulties and focusing on the disparities and the difficult things. It's trying to show how people are maybe more alike than they're different.
So in many ways, the global face of cancer is one face at a time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Carolyn, you know, we love stories on Frankly Speaking. So tell us, that before we get to our next break here, tell us another story about, a situation that particularly stuck with you, captured your attention. Again, whether it was difficult to see, or whether it was a victory, or what, you know, whatever it might be. Tell us about that.
So I was in Kenya in February of 2011, still working on the British Airways project, and I met a woman, Rosemary Okio. And when she was first diagnosed with breast cancer, she considered it a death sentence and refused all treatment. Her sister-in-law convinced her ultimately to go to the doctor, have a mastectomy, and begin treatment. So when I met her at my hotel in Nairobi, she had just come from having her blood drawn before starting her third round of chemo. She wasn't sure if she was going to continue her treatment, though. I told her my story, my mother's story, and she couldn't believe it because I was the very first cancer survivor she had ever met. Everyone she had ever known who had had cancer had died. She also didn't know there were such things as breast prosthesis or mastectomy bras, and I had brought some with me to donate, 50 of them actually to donate, which of course was the one bag they wanted to pull out in customs, and my husband have had that bag. So I took this woman up to my hotel room and fitted her with a prosthesis and a bra. And, you know, here she was, this Rosemary, 20 minutes before, was really despondent and ready to give up and die. And now she was dancing and laughing in my hotel room with this renewed spirit and will to fight to survive. And I'm not sure which one of us was happier that day, and it doesn't really matter, but it's experiences like this that keep me motivated and push me to work harder every day to try to make a difference.
Do you think, Carolyn, on a global scale, there's a recognition of, I know there are a lot of sort of victories to be claimed in eliminating some illnesses in the developing world. But I think that one of the consequences of that we haven't really addressed as a global healthcare community is that the greatest risk factor for cancer is age. So the longer people live, the more cancers we're going to see. And I don't know that the global health community has really thought about the impact of addressing, curing some of these other diseases.
Right, the non-communicable diseases are compounded as people age, you know, and cancer. And then there's the simple things like HPV vaccination that could be done, that isn't being done, things like that on more of a global level. I think, aging. So people keep saying, "Oh, more and more people have cancer all the time." But right, I think it's partially that people are just growing older, and they would have gotten cancer anyway. Like to your point. It's just that now we see it, and it's also there's a lot of environmental factors that are changing. People's lifestyles are changing. They're going off. You know, as people move from less of an agrarian society to more of an industrial society, particularly I see it in Southeast Asia, they change their diet significantly and their exercise level.
Right. So there's I think so many factors that are really, kind of weighing into this. And I know
and
that the data shows
level,
that we're certainly going to be seeing more and more cancers on a global basis. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go back. We've got a lot more to discuss with Carolyn Taylor, photographer and founder and president of Global Focus on Cancer.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB. Or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Azi, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery.